for you.
Here we go, brownies. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go, brownies.
Here we go.
Here we go. Yeah, this for my dogs from the east to the west side. Rocket brown and orange with me, baby. Let's ride. Represent the land, let them know. Tell them, here we go, brownies. Here we go. Yeah, here we go.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of the Here We Go Brownies podcast. A lot to get to tonight. Thank you all for joining us. Before we get into it, here's a quick word from our friends over at True Fan Travel.
Join the Dog Pound on the road this season with True Fan Travel, an official fan experience partner of the Cleveland Browns. Travel to stadiums across the country with other Browns fans and experience the games like never before. This trip includes everything: a private charter flight, hotel, an all-inclusive tailgate, game tickets, boat party, transportation, and more. Cheer on the Browns in New Orleans and party with Cleveland Browns legend Kevin Mack. Visit truefantravel.com today and reserve your ultimate Browns travel package.
I'm Allie Huyeson, coming at you live from Pensacola, Florida. And as always, joined with me in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio, we've got Dustin, how's it going?
Allie, we talked about it on Sunday, but doing a show on Wednesday is so much more fun after a victory on Sunday, victory Monday. It carries into the fall, you know. It's a more joyful time to do a podcast when, and let's be completely honest, it wasn't pretty on Sunday, but as we know in the National Football League, you need to win by 1 or 30. It doesn't matter. It's just a W in the win column when it comes to, there's no style points in the NFL. Just win and move on to the next week.
Yeah, things are a lot easier to dissect. You can go back and feel a little bit more optimistic about this Browns team coming off of the win. Of course, came down to the wire. You mentioned it wasn't a pretty win, 18-13 over the Jacksonville Jaguars, but it doesn't matter. It's a W in the win column. That's all that matters at the end of the season. And additionally, right, this was an AFC opponent. This mattered more than the Cowboys game. And it also matters when you take a look around the division when the Cincinnati Bengals and the Baltimore Ravens are now 0-2. They are 0-2. So this game, you mentioned it last week, Dustin. You said, hey, this game against Jacksonville, it's a must win. And we said, well, that's kind of crazy to say week two. But kind of it was. You know, one, to create an identity of who this Browns team wants to be. Are they going to be gritty? Are they going to be a scrappy team? Are they going to be physical? Or are they going to revert back to the Cowboys game where emotion takes over and not in a good way? So right, I think that they were kind of able to right the ship enough for us fans, for the team and the organization to be a little bit more optimistic going into the next few weeks. The Browns have the New York Football Giants on Sunday at home. They have to put on a better home performance than they did in week one. But I think coming off of that win, some things were worked out. And, you know, we talked about this, Dustin, where the first few weeks of an NFL season, because of the shortened preseason, you're going to see teams starting to iron things out. And it's going to be a little clunky. Teams are really just trying to figure out who they are, what they want to do, and how they want to do it. And I think we're going to see that with this Browns team.
Yeah, Allie, and I tell you what, speaking of the Browns team, had a great time at the Greater Cleveland Food Bank Taste of the Browns. I'll be dropping some of the interviews that we did. Got to hang out with Dustin Hopkins, Maurice Hurst, Joel Petonio, and Ethan Posick, and Jack Conklin. And here's a newsflash for everybody. I just point blanked asked Jack Conklin, are you ready to go for week three against the Giants? Big grins. He's going to be on the football field. So I think, I don't know. I tried to ask him what, if he was going to be at left tackle or right tackle. I don't think he wanted to tell me that because I was, you know, as he was having fun though. He's like, you're asking some really good questions. I'm like, well, that's what I do. Right. Allie, you'll love this. I don't know if you saw this. I took a picture. I'm 6'1", almost 6'2". I'm standing in between Ethan Posick and Jack Conklin. I look like I'm 5'2". These are big offensive linemen. Like, you don't really realize it till you're in a room with them. But it was a great time. They're in good spirits as well, and they feel very confident going into this game against the Giants. Like they said, got a lot of mistakes to clean up. They said it to them, myself. Joel said, look, we made too many mistakes on the offensive line, and we're going to clean that up. We'll get it right. And he goes, we're still not perfect. And Dustin Hopkins said the same thing. So guess what? We preach about it on this show, but internally they know it too. It was if you can have an ugly win, it was an ugly win on Sunday, and they know that. So I think we'll see some of that stuff cleaned up against the Giants in week three.
Yeah. Well, we have to. And by the way, Jack Conklin is 6'6", 326 pounds. So yeah, big guy in Jack Conklin. No, we need to. There's certain things that I think we can be patient with as Browns fans, right? We can be patient with this run game. We know that the Browns were missing Nick Chubb. We can be patient with this offensive line because we know that they're starting two tackles who haven't been available. However, what we can't be patient with and really understanding about was, you know, all of these pre-snap penalties that carried over from week one. I asked Stump Mitchell yesterday on the Stump Talk podcast, how do you correct that? And I don't know what the answer is. He didn't really know what the answer was. There isn't. You just have to go and do it. You just have to get reps. A lot of these guys did not play throughout the offseason, obviously, with injuries and whatnot. And then in the preseason, we didn't see these guys. And the most valuable thing is reps. So we are going to – it sucks. It's not fun to see all these pre-snap penalties. But my question is, you know, it's the pre-snap stuff. Why are you so unprepared? How do you not know where to line up on the line of scrimmage? Like, it's weird. That's my biggest gripe about this team. We've seen progress in every other category. I mean, the defense stepped it up. Deshaun Watson looked a lot better. The skill position players looked a lot better. They could catch the ball. Because of that, maybe Deshaun Watson looked a lot better. He was getting better protection. The run game was pretty good. So, like, things did take a turn for the right, in the right direction. But, man, it's that pre-snap stuff that just it's ugly. I don't like it.
Yeah, like I said, the guys, every one of the offensive linemen sat there and said, yeah, we got to clean that up, and it's not acceptable. I mean, that was literally their answer. They were like, yeah, we got to win. We're lucky, and it's not acceptable, and we have a lot of stuff to clean up this week. So I got to tell you, I really appreciate when a player tells that to you in person. Like, he knows on his mind what his teammates need to do, and I'm sure what their coaching staff and the offensive line coach and everybody is saying, you know, like, hey, this is unacceptable. We got to get this fixed, because – you can do that maybe against a Jacksonville, but man, you start playing your AFC opponents and these tougher teams, you can't do that. That'll be a death sentence for a team on offense if you do that against a really talented team like a Kansas City or a Chargers team. And I'll call them a talented team because they're 2-0. Yeah, but I mean, you know, I mean, if you do that against a team like that that is well coached, that's doomsday for a team. So
yeah, Dustin, why don't you tell our listeners about where you're at right now?
Guys, we are at Five Iron Golf in downtown Cleveland. But, Allie, you're going to love this. So, David, remember this. I just found out today it's Women Wednesdays as well. You ready for this? Women Wednesdays, 5 to 8. If anybody's watching this podcast, any Wednesday, come down here, 5 to 8. Women Golf for free. F-R-E, 5 to 8. Special on mimosas and other things here for the women, but if you're in the greater Cleveland area and you're a female and you want to come down and golf, and if you bring your boyfriend, your husband, or your significant other, the men get 50% off. So women, free. Hey, guys, that's a real smart date idea. I'm just telling you. Take your girl. You get 50% off. They got nice food here. But when I found that out, I'm like, man, that's a great thing. Come after work. Come down and get an hour or two in and hit the golf balls. That's amazing. So, yeah, women, come down here every Wednesday night.
That's pretty cool. Also, head on over to the Hartville Marketplace and Flea Market. Head over there any week, and they are open year-round. On the inside, they've got over 3 acres of indoor shopping, over 50 unique shops, fresh produce, meat, cheese, coffee. It's fully heated and air-conditioned. Or step outside, and they have over 12 acres of a collector's paradise, 1,000 vendors. They're open Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays year-round, so be sure to go check them out. And also a quick shout-out to our friends over at Stadium Mustard. Guys, if you don't have Stadium Mustard in your kitchen this season, you're doing it wrong. The iconic brand, the iconic taste, love from ballparks to backyards and everywhere in between. Stadium Mustard is a smooth brown mustard, rich in both taste and tradition. By the way, it's loved by millions, so be sure to head on over to stadiummustard.com to shop now. Just turning it back to that game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, we mentioned it really wasn't the prettiest win, but there were some interesting things that came out of that. I want to talk about special teams. There's a huge emphasis on special teams and their decision to kind of fall back on the punt game and the kicking game. Late in the game, Kevin Stefanski makes the decision to punt the ball away and pin the Jacksonville Jaguars down deep, I think on the 1 or 2 yard line.
That was amazing.
Ultimately leading to a safety. And I mean, why the Browns came away with a win in this game. At this time on Twitter, now, I mean, Browns Twitter is a crazy place, but at the time it was like, what are you doing? Why are we doing this? You know, impressive. You know, what do you make of that play call?
Again, it's one of those, you're a hero if it works and you're doomed if you don't, right? So I was okay with it, but it's one of those where you have to kind of sometimes, I'm not saying outsmart your opponent, but that game was so tight. Sometimes you have to take some risk versus reward type of situations in a game like that to make something change the dynamic of the football game. And so that was kind of my thought process in that, because you're right. If you don't execute that correctly, you know what I'm saying? Like, that could become devastating. So.
Yeah, and I agree with Jason here. We've got the best kicking team in the league. I never second guessed that goal. One thing that was very apparent in that game against Jacksonville was Corey Bohorquez. He's really good. He's a really good punter. Now, he struggled a little bit in week one, but on Sunday, that's the player that we know him to be. And same with Dustin Hopkins, who is just money every single time. It's really a joy watching him play. A question I wanted to highlight that I asked Stump yesterday on the podcast, and I want to run it by you. I want to talk about the running game. I actually do like the duo of Jerome Ford and Deontay Foreman. Now, obviously, we all love and miss Nick Chubb and can't wait to see him back out there. But for the time being, you know, I think it's a pretty good duo. It's very similar to Jerome Ford and Kareem Hunt. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But Foreman, he's got that short yardage power and explosive speed. Ford, he's more that boom or bust potential. Deontay Foreman was statistically the lead back against Jacksonville. Were you surprised by that?
I would say yes and no, but the only reason I would say no is the one thing that surprised me is the Browns started the game and they had him out there instead of Ford. He was the first running back out of there that they started, you know, I was like, oh, 27's out there. You know what I mean? I was a little surprised by that. So yeah, if he gets more opportunities, I guess I won't be surprised that he, you know, ended up being the leading rusher, but I just think it's because the Browns were getting some pretty good chunk plays on offense early in this football game, which led to obviously him having more rushing yards than him because of that, because things, as we all know, kind of tightened up and didn't go anywhere in the second half. So I think that has a lot more to do with it than, you know, just because we had early success and Foreman looked good out there. But I agree, Allie. This 1-2 punch reminds me a lot of that bam, bam, Kareem Hunt when you need that extra 2 or 3 yards. Yeah. And you're like, right, Ford can get out in space and run and make a guy miss and, you know, maybe get that extra yardage and big play downfield. So yeah, I like this. It'll be interesting to see what happens when obviously Chubb comes back and what that dynamic looks like. But there's no reason you can't have 3 running backs because again, we know that Chubb's not going to be on a 40. He's going to be on a pitch count when it comes back. He's not like he's going to get this huge heavy load. So yeah, and then you have a trio of running backs, right? And we learned in that 2020 season in 21 when you had that combination. And the Browns went to that late in the third and in the fourth quarter. That was lights out for the Browns. Like, they literally would put teams away just wearing them down. So I'm all for this, especially late in games and when it gets colder this year. And you have to rely more on that run game versus the passing game. I'm all for it.
Yeah. Real quick from Ricky. Dustin, I just want you to know that I like your T-shirt. It's a pretty cool shirt.
All right.
That's a pretty cool shirt.
Yeah,
I like that. I do like that. yes. So the run game, obviously it was working. And that's who the Browns have always kind of wanted to be. Now we know that with Nick Chubb out this year, well, so far this year anyways, you know, that scheme may change a little bit, that identity may change, and they're going to look to distribute the football, especially through the air. But if we look back on this past Sunday, Deontay Foreman, 14 for 42 yards. He was averaging 3 a carry. His longest on the day was 9 yards. Jerome Ford, 7 carries for 64 yards. He was averaging 9.1, with his longest on the day was 36. I was surprised to see that Foreman was the lead back, but based off of the situation, yeah. I think it's totally situational. Based off of the situations that Deshaun Watson was putting this team in, instead of it being second and third and long, like it was, right. It was two, you know, second and three, third and two, which allows
third and four, right?
Yeah, Deontay Foreman to carry the ball 3-4 yards, get the first down. So it was totally situational. I wouldn't be as comfortable saying, yes, he's going to be the number one back for this Browns team going forward. I think we'll see that vary, but it was good to see them get that going. I want to talk about a comment here by our friend James. How about that Watson-Judy connection? It's not 100, but it has the potential to be one of the best in the league. I agree. especially right now with the abnormal drops from Amari Cooper. And by the way, I talked to Stump yesterday on Stump Talk podcast. He said he is not concerned about that. You know, it's just working through what that is. You know, I don't think it's going to be an ongoing problem.
No.
Just got to get the reps. But I do like what I see out of Jerry Jeudy and Deshaun Watson. Kind of a safety net for Deshaun. Jerry Jeudy, he had 5 receptions for 73 yards. He was averaging 14.6. He was targeted 6 times. He caught 5 of them. So he's got that big playability, but he also has the ability to be kind of a security blanket, a safety net for Deshaun.
Yeah, and I will say I see that same thing with Elijah Moore on the other side. He's kind of that safety net that those guys can, when Deshaun's in trouble, he has kind of that escape, you know, to either one of those guys, Elijah or Jerry Jeudy. And then, you know, obviously Amari Cooper, you want more of a big downfield run, right? That's what you want that guy for, right? So he can go down there. Amari can get those big chunk plays for you and break away. You know, it'll be interesting. Obviously, we didn't discuss this, but I know David will probably touch on this a little bit. But we pretty much, I feel like we've lost David Bell for the year with that unfortunate injury that he had. So, I mean, I honestly want to see more out of Tillman. I mean, we drafted him in a pretty decent spot. I want to see more production out of Tillman. And I think this brings open that opportunity where Tillman can get more play. So I hope that happens.
Well, and he needs to be consistent. I mean, we're still battling through some of the issues from the rookie year, you know, some of those inconsistencies. So, I mean, Cedric Tillman needs to go out there and produce. I know that this is a crowded receiving room. I mean, it is with Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, no longer David Bell, but Elijah Moore. I mean, Cedric Tillman, he has an opportunity, but he's got to make the most of it. Now, it also depends on the play of Deshaun Watson. All of this goes hand in hand. If Deshaun Watson's not playing well, the receivers aren't going to play well. If the offensive line's not playing well, we can't run the ball. We, you know, Deshaun's going to not play well. So it all goes hand in hand. And that goes back to my initial point of the Browns need to figure out what they want their identity to be. I know they're battling through some injuries. They're battling through some things. They need to figure out who that is, what they want to be, and how they want to do it. And be able to fall back on that. That's the biggest thing for this Browns team. But I agree with you. Dustin, tell our friends about Teresa's Pizza.
Guys, if you haven't had Teresa's Pizza, it is Cleveland-style pizza. That's right. Go there for lunch. Go there for dinner or for Saturday for the big game, whatever your favorite college football game is, or your favorite team on Sunday. We know that's the Browns. Go watch those guys, of course, and get Teresa's Pizza. In Mayfield Heights and in University Heights since 1969 here in Cleveland. That's University Heights and Mayfield Heights for your wonderful pizza needs. And by the way, it's Cleveland style, so all the toppings underneath is great. I wanted to share something with you that I saw somebody post online. I did not know this because there's been a lot made of Deshaun Watson and his up and down play. So since 1999, so most Browns fans, you know, we know the years prior to Bernie having success and stuff like that. But since the Browns came back in the league, so 25 years ago, I'm going to rank these quarterbacks. These are the 5 quarterbacks with a minimum of 14 games. Okay. And this is their win records. With 436, Derek Anderson went 17 of 22. Jacoby Brissett, 438, 7 and 9. Baker Mayfield, 500, 30-30. Brian Hoyer, 588, 10 and 7. Deshaun Watson, 9 and 5, 643. So when you take the lens off, it's crazy to think. I mean, there's been so much made of his uneven play, but it's, and that could be a lot to do with really crappy Browns quarterback play for the last 25 years. But it's crazy to think, amongst all of that, he still ranks a couple games better than Brian Hoyer, who a lot would say was probably our most consistent in, you know, was that season that we went 10 and 6 and, you know, had a great, but I think that's interesting when you look at that and you kind of pull it back and you just look at it from a statistical standpoint. If he can just be, like you said, Allie, he doesn't have to be elite. No. If he's just above average, this is a playoff team. And we talked about that in the preseason. He doesn't have to be Superman. He doesn't have to put the entire team on his back. He just needs to not create turnovers, run the offense, and be above average. And you'll have a really good Browns football team.
Yeah, most definitely. I that is interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that. I wouldn't have had that, but that's an interesting way of looking at it. And it's true. Okay, we do have some injury updates to bring you, David Bell being one of them. So with that, let's bring on Dr. David Ullery to the program. This interview is brought to you by our friends over at Lorello Vineyards.
Here we go, Brownies. Here we go. Woof, woof.
Hello, welcome to Lorello Vineyards, Larry and Kim Lorello. We have a beautiful Here We Go Brownies wine that we would like to offer to you this season as we did last season. We have several other award-winning wines, lovely entertainment and events coming this summer. So come and see us. Wine a bit. You'll feel better.
Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing you at the Muni lot this fall. Go Browns.
All right, let's bring him on, Dr. David Ullery, orthopedic surgeon, to the program. David, what's going on?
Good evening. Hey, Dustin and Allie. Thanks for having me on.
Good evening, David. How are you, sir?
I'm great. I am great.
How you living? How you feeling?
I feel good. I'm happy that football's back and on, and it's exciting to be so involved with fantasy in other ways, and obviously the podcast. Happy the Browns got a win. Disappointed the Lions couldn't pull that one off, but you know, can't win them all. But ultimately, I'm in a good place. How are you?
Well, I was just gonna say, I think out of all of us, the one that's doing the worst is Birdie. I saw a post online that Birdie is having not a good day.
Yeah. That's so you know what happened? I work from home, and she got sick today. Not to get too gross, but she threw up like 6 times, and I said, that's not normal. So I called the vet. They said, yep, you need to bring her in. So we go to the vet and they tested her for a bunch of different things. Turns out she has some bacteria going on in her stomach, and they said it's likely that she ate a frog.
A frog?
A frog, yeah. Yep, a frog.
I was just saying, I know Birdie has ate a lot of crazy things, and you've told me some stories of what Birdie has ate, but yeah. A frog is a frog. Whole new...
That's a new one.
Raw, a raw frog at that, too, probably. So
yeah, like a formerly alive frog, and she
fresh
said,
frog.
Yep, I'm going to eat that.
Not to make a corny joke, but that was the last ribbit of that frog,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, it was. It was, I don't know, they said that down here, these little frogs, they're everywhere, they're just little things. They carry this certain bacteria, and they said, that's probably what it is. And I said, my girl would never. She has, you know, such a good palate. She wouldn't do that. But
did she eat a whole thing of, I can't remember, paper, like she ate like something that, at your old condo that was like diabolical.
He had 400 Q-tips one time.
That's insane to me.
Yep, she did. As a puppy. She just went and did that. I mean, I had eyes.
Birdie and Ludo too.
It's a zoo in this house. But nonetheless, we've got some Browns injuries to go over, David. And it's the David Bell injury. That is an injury we haven't talked about yet on this podcast. So that's surprising given the slew of injuries the Browns faced last year. But let's get into it. I guess let's start there.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely a good place to start just because it's a little bit more of a unique or rare injury. So he had a hip dislocation and ultimately is going to need surgery for it. So as you can imagine, dislocating any joint is uncomfortable, whether it's a shoulder, an elbow, a wrist, a hip, a knee, an ankle. Probably the most commonly dislocated joint is the shoulder, followed by the ankle and then the hip. But the hip, it requires a lot of force. It's a ball and socket joint, and it's a deep socket. So, I mean, if you see like an anatomy diagram of a hip, I mean, the socket is almost a full cup, and the ball sits inside of it. And there's a big like suction force that kind of keeps it in place along with all the bony congruency. And so to be able to dislocate it takes a ton of energy and a ton of force. And where we probably most commonly see that is in car accidents, truthfully. Because the mechanism and the way it happens is it dislocates out the back. So behind the person is where the head goes out of the socket. And usually we see it in a car accident because people's knees hit the dashboard and that impact pushes the hip back out of the socket. And so similarly in football, whether it's he was on his knees and someone landed on his backside or he was driven into his knees, something like that normally causes it. Now, I don't know the true nature or direction of his dislocation. They can dislocate anteriorly or out the front as well. Most commonly, it would be out the back. And so, you know, a lot of them will spontaneously reduce, meaning they'll go back in place on their own. The ones that don't, it's one of the few like orthopedic emergencies, if you will, just because the longer that the hip is not in socket, the higher the likelihood of the blood supply being disrupted and the bone dying. And so, you know, we in orthopedics try to say that any hip dislocation needs to be reduced within 6 hours, but obviously sooner than that for comfort and just for pain control. But, you know, if someone's in a car accident and it takes them a while to get to the hospital or for whatever reason, we say 6 hours is kind of the cutoff, but certainly his was in well before that. But so in terms of, you know, updates and sort of what the outlook is for him, you know, the news came out pretty shortly, or I guess it would have been on Monday, that he is going to require surgery for this. The specific surgery, I don't know. There's probably two likely scenarios. One, when you dislocate something that's so constrained, you likely break a piece of bone with it. And so part of the socket probably broke off. And that's actually the injury that Tua had when he was in college. His last game at Alabama, I believe it was his last game, or the last game of one of his second to last season, he dislocated his hip, broke a piece of the socket off and had to have it surgically repaired. And I know the surgeon who did it. And so a world-renowned trauma surgeon. But so he had a similar injury. And the only other person I can think of that I've heard of this actually happening to, I don't know his name, but it was the Michigan State game in 2015. It was the trouble with the snap. The Michigan State returner or the Michigan State defender who picked up the ball, ran to the end zone in the celebration, dislocated his hip in the pile in the back of the end zone. Either way, pretty severe injury, going to require surgery. And if the bone wasn't broken, the capsule was torn. So they're gonna have to repair that just to stabilize the joint. So either way, pretty big process, likely out for the season just because of the recovery that's involved.
Yeah. Dustin, sorry, I'm muting you. It's quite loud. So if you've got something, you can unmute yourself. That's kind of jarring, you know, just that severe of an injury. And it really is terrible for David Bell, who was cut by the Cleveland Browns, makes it to the practice squad, and then was elevated, and then has this happen. For somebody who, man, it just sucked. He was probably drafted a little bit higher than he should have been and was given, kind of thrust into a role that he wasn't prepared for. That was coming off of the Jarvis Landry year, or where the Browns parted ways with Jarvis Landry. And was I frozen for a second?
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. I saw that. That was weird.
We could hear you.
Cool. But where the, I think we all thought that David Bell was going to be the next Jarvis Landry, and that wasn't the case. And we were hoping for him to have maybe another opportunity. See you, Dustin. Where he could make some plays and put some good film out there, just to see him have a season-ending injury is very detrimental, not only for this year, but for, you know, the potential future of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a broken bone. It's a lot more severe than, say, like the fibula fracture that Pacheco just got. That's a pretty quick injury to recover from. There isn't a lot of soft tissue damage with it, so he can have that surgically repaired and be back in no time. But with this one, like I said, it's a big joint. It takes a ton of energy to dislocate it. And so, I mean, is there a chance that he could be back end of season, maybe playoffs? Maybe there's a small chance, but I don't know the nature of the injury. Like I said, whether it's bony or just purely ligamentous and like capsule, but he's not gonna be able to walk on it for 6 weeks while it heals. So that alone is going to impact his endurance, his fitness, and just his ability to, you know, perform at a level high enough to play an NFL game and return within the same season.
Yeah. Also, let's go through some of the other injuries. It looks like, hi Jimmy, David Njoku is not going to be available this upcoming week, but hopefully in the very near future, we will get to see him.
Yeah. It's definitely detrimental just for the team in general to see Bell have this injury, just because, I mean, we're already kind of having some problems with skill positions, and then to add a little more salt to the wound between Njoku being out for another week and then David Bell. And then you got guys like even Pierre Strong or Jamari Thrash, who did not practice today. That doesn't mean they're not going to play or they're not going to be available, but you know, things are thinning out across the league. I mean, it just seems like there were a ton of injury news coming out. And so the Browns aren't immune to it by any means, but yeah, hopefully with Njoku, one more week and he can come back. He has that high ankle sprain. So it's really week to week with these things. Just like a low ankle sprain. It's just about how much recovery and rest they can get and combine that with healing, but while also still staying mobile and like ready to play. And so give him another week and I could potentially see him coming back. It seems like it's not that high severity of an injury, but I don't think it's unwise to keep him out if he's still having pain or a limp or something.
One thing that we didn't get to talk about last week was Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. He opted into wearing the Guardian cap, David. And I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, I was talking to Stump Mitchell about it yesterday. He applauded him for wearing it. You know, maybe there's some other players around the league that should be wearing this that are not currently. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's a new development. This is the first season where the NFL has allowed players to wear it in-game. Now, it, 2 years ago, it was given to all high-impact players for training camp only. So we're talking linebackers, linemen, and running backs. Last year, it was stated that all players must wear it during training camp except for quarterbacks and I think special teams players. But a lot of the quarterbacks opted into wearing it anyway. And then, again, now this regular season people have it to be worn during games. There's some mixed data on it. You will find the NFL kind of fanfaring the fact that this is going to reduce concussions, or that it does. That's a little bit of twisting the numbers and propaganda, if you will, because ultimately we have data that shows some mixed results. And again, it's an investment. It's the NFL. They want to protect their product and also protect their players. And so if there's any chance that it's going to make a difference, I totally support the use of it. But just to kind of look in the actual science on it. So what is the Guardian cap? It's a padded helmet cover that just essentially drapes over top of the helmet and is kind of secured to the face mask and the back of the helmet with clips. It is padded, but it also kind of moves. If you think of like a loose fitting wig or a hat, it can slide around and move around, but it's attached to certain anchor points. And so the idea is to add protection with padding. But what they found actually in some biomechanical studies is that the helmet actually reduces the impact with blows that are like glancing to the side rather than directly on. And they theorize that the added protection from the helmet is actually more from the fact that it slides rather than from the extra padding, because it enables that energy to be dissipated instead of going through the helmet to the brain. And so there's a couple different studies they've looked at least in the lab, it seems to have promising results. They have shown that it can reduce on average up to 15 to 20% of the impact of a head hit. Combining that, two players colliding, up to 20% of that impact can be reduced. So ultimately, you think, wow, that's a good thing. Like, it's actually reducing impact, reducing blows, and maybe actually going to provide some protection. But when it came to real life tests, it really hasn't panned out that way. In 2019, 2019, 2020, 2021, the University of Stanford did a test on it where they had members of the team wear it during practice and then also during season. And they kind of combined taking the data from the helmet and the impacts and also looked at video recordings to see what happened during these practices or during these games. And they noted that there are 97 head-to-head collisions, but they found that the cap failed to show a significant reduction in the impact from blows that didn't cause a concussion. And so ultimately what they're kind of theorizing is that even in the absence of a concussion, these small impacts that still happen even with the Guardian cap can and will contribute to the development of chronic traumatic encephalopathy or CTE. So, I mean, going back to kind of the costs, the cost risk or the benefit, the risk benefit analysis, it only costs $50. So they're not expensive. They're not a big investment. And at the end of the day, it's not going to reduce your ability to play the game or have a negative impact on it. There's certain players out there who are pretty strongly against it because it quote unquote doesn't fit with their swag, or some of them feel like it's heavy or it's not breathable and their heads get hotter. But regardless, we have data to show that at least in the lab, it does make a difference, but ultimately, at least clinically and in like the actual high speed portions of the game, it does not show a reduction in impacts that are likely going to contribute to brain injury and CTE. So more data is needed. More studies are needed. There's not a ton out there on it so far, but I do not think it's a bad thing that it's being starting to be implemented in regular gameplay.
So I asked you this earlier, I'm just curious to talk about it a little bit further. If the data eventually does come out that this is 100% effective in preventing head trauma and concussions, do you foresee a world where the NFL requires this for all players?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely do. I mean, I know just a year ago they were like, no, you can't wear them in season. I think that was sort of it's a new item. It's kind of almost experimental. And so they were saying like, hey, like, I don't want you wearing them just yet because we don't know. But if it comes out and good data shows that it does reduce the number of concussions over a player's lifetime, I can absolutely see the NFL mandating and enforcing it because, again, it's $50. They're not expensive. And if they're effective at such a low cost, like there's no downside to doing it. You might have some players that kind of try to you know, buck against it or fight it a little bit. But at the end of the day, if it's going to protect the brains and protect the product and protect these players and these humans who are playing this game, I don't see why they wouldn't. I mean, in the last decade alone, and two decades especially, the NFL has made so many strides and implemented so many different things to try and reduce concussions. If this is another thing to help do that, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't.
So, question, you know, I never thought about that, but you're right. Now that you sit there, if you come like a violent kind of hit and that helmet slides, you know, onto that guardian cap, and it's not a full, you know, impact helmet to helmet, it'll be interesting as more studies come out. Now, the breathable thing, and maybe I'm assuming, as everything with technology and evolution happens with products, I would assume with a guardian cap, they could put air holes to kind of coincide with where the air holes are in a helmet. You know what I mean? So if you're worried about your head getting too hot or whatever that may be, I would assume on these guardian caps, you can put breathable things in them that would make it so it's just not a solid cap over your head, right? I'm assuming there's ways to probably do that in the future if they're saying, hey, we'll wear them, but it's hot in our helmets. Well, guess what? If we strap it in, it matches and conforms to where your, you know, air spaces are in your helmet. I would think that would make sense, right? Because you're just trying to conform it to fit onto like any product you would wear, right? So I'm assuming, but it is interesting. Like, I think your data is interesting that it's inconclusive, right? We don't really know if this reduces or makes a huge difference. It'll be interesting to see as this goes on. But honestly, David, I'm going to ask your professional opinion on this. I don't think we'll have real data or hard data on something like this until we have more actual players that wear them in game and we have more, you know, statistical people to have data with. Does that make sense? Like, the more people that wear them in game, we can say, okay, over the 2024 season, 80 players wore them, right? X amount took hits. You know what I'm saying? I don't think unless you have more players actually physically wear them in games, can we really have real, I don't know, data, if that makes sense, like stuff that you could actually go after.
No, I mean, that's exactly it. You're looking at just the sample size. Right now, we have very few players who wear it. And in the reporting of injuries in camp versus in regular season, it differs, I think, or at least it's not as publicly known. And so you're absolutely right. Data actually showing a significant reduction in this won't come out for years, probably. But there is a bit of a push to try and start using them in high school sports as well, just because, especially with high school athletes, they're younger, their brains are not nearly as developed, and it may have an impact for them, even if it doesn't in the NFL. And so if they can start protecting these kids' brains earlier in middle school and high school, I think that would have a pretty significant impact. And so, I definitely think we need more data, and more players will start wearing it. And the more players that wear it, the better we're going to know about it. One of the things that they did mention, though, in that study from Stanford is that part of the reason they theorized that it didn't really reduce the amount of impacts that may lead to subclinical concussions is because a lot of those impacts happen with the face mask, and the face mask is not protected. So we are taught, you know, as football players, to tackle with your face up. You want to put your face in the chest to look at them. And so in an effort to protect your neck and your spine and avoid spearing, we keep our heads up. We keep our face up. And so that leads to a lot of face-to-face contact or face-to-chest or whatever. Your head's getting impacted from the face mask. And that's the face mask is not covered by the guardian cap, and you can't. So that's one obstacle that may be a challenge to overcome. But again, either way, if it has some sort of impact to reduce concussions, it's totally worth it. And one of the other things they mentioned is that helmets are not uniform across the league. Everybody wears different helmets. And so you could see, I wouldn't doubt in the future, if you see more of a unified effort to limit the amount of helmets or the variation in helmets that is available to players.
I was talking to Stump yesterday about this and said, like, you know, at the end of the day, yes, when you look at a still photo, it looks a little weird. We're not used to seeing them out there. But when you were watching the game and watching JOK, I didn't even notice it. You really can't even tell a difference. So,
Well, think about when they first introduced helmets. Think about how weird that probably looked to people when they first introduced helmets back in, I don't know, the 40s or 50s, and people started playing with leather helmets and then metal helmets, like, or whatever they're made out of now. Like, that's every time you add a new element or a different brace or a different protection, it's going to look different or weird. I completely agree. But the more people use it, the more it becomes normal, and the less we care about how it looks and the more we're worried about how impactful it is in reducing concussions.
Yeah.
So I have a question.
And you're right.
Yeah. David, you brought this up, and refresh me if you brought this up. And I like where you went down that, down to the high school level. Are there studies out there that show if somebody has multiple concussions, they are more susceptible to getting more concussions after they've had one or two? Or is the data inconsistent on that? Because it'd be interesting. And the reason I ask that, if you're protecting that kid in high school, like you said, the brains aren't fully developed and he doesn't have like major hits, you know, or things happen to him early in his life, does that help from getting those injuries later in life, in college and in the NFL or whatever, you know, sport they're playing? I'm just curious because that's interesting. Like you said, if they're kind of getting more aggressive in high school, you know, would that lead to, but I was just curious if there's any studies that show specifically people, if they do get a concussion, are they more susceptible, you know, to getting more or multiple concussions?
Yeah. Yeah. There's data that does show that once you have one, it's a little bit easier or more likely for you to sustain a second one. Certainly there's a chronicity or chronological timeline to that. So if it, you get a second hit very quickly afterwards, you're more likely to, but even years down the road, I mean, it physically and chemically alters your brain structure. And so because of those alterations and those differences in the connections between the neurons, you are already more susceptible to sustaining a concussion even years later. So absolutely, if we can start reducing the occurrence of them in high school and middle school, then it's going to have huge impacts for these kids in their future when they make it to college and the NFL.
Okay. That makes sense. Talking about something else real quick, Jason puts here in the comments, Dr. David, do you think Deshaun Watson can throw over 30 yards with the shoulder, or do you think he's limited? I mean, truthfully, we haven't seen him throw the ball downfield much or well. Let's talk about that a little bit. I think there's other factors here, right? Like week one, offensive line was atrocious. We couldn't run the ball. We couldn't really do anything. So they were just throwing behind the line of scrimmage. They were doing the dink and dunk things that they could. They barely could do that. This past week in Jacksonville, we saw a little bit more of a downfield threat. But, you know, David, your opinion on that, you know, do you think that the limitations or, excuse me, the play calls to throw the ball short yardage or even behind the line of scrimmage is due to Deshaun Watson's limitations?
Yeah. I think – to answer the question,
by the way, we know.
No, I know. Absolutely. I mean, to answer the question directly, I do think that he can throw the ball more than 30 yards downfield. I don't think his shoulder is limiting him from being able to do that. It's funny just looking at his stats. His long pass for the season currently is 30 yards. Now, I don't know if that's air yards or just the total completion, the total yardage. But regardless, I think he can. I believe he can. It's just a matter of, I think there's multiple things at play. One, it's his confidence. We know that that's been kind of hit or miss. And you can see clearly from week one to week two that in-game reps matter. Game reps matter. Game reps matter. I mean, at the end of the day, he looks like a completely different quarterback after one quarter on Sunday compared to the week before. And I think a lot of that is just the fact that he is more comfortable in the scheme. The game slowed down a little bit for him, and he's feeling better because you cannot reproduce game action like playing in a game. And so while his shoulder may limit him in terms of maybe his endurance or maybe his ultimate distance and, you know, throwing it 50, 60 yards down the field, I still think he's capable of putting out 30, 40 yards and placing it there. Now his accuracy, his ability to drop it in a bucket or in a basket, if you will, may be impacted just because he's lost some of that more dynamic control and that motor function just from not using it. But the more he throws, especially in games, the better and more fine-tuned he will become. So while it is a result of the shoulder that maybe he has some inconsistencies and some inaccuracies here, it's not necessarily something that should be permanent as long as he continues to have good game reps and good protection and perform like he showed us he could on Sunday.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, David, so along those lines, it's interesting to see the reps that you were talking about and the speed of the game. And the reason I just wanted to bring this up, I don't know if you guys saw, they were questioning Joe Burrow and, you know, his difficulties that he's been having and stuff. And he literally said in his post-game conference, I'm getting back into sync of the speed of the game. I mean, he was very forthright about that. And I think when we think about Deshaun Watson, the guy that went out in the Baltimore game and has not been back to live speed of a game, you know, even Joe Burrow, who everybody would consider an elite quarterback, said, hey, look, I'm not back in that space where I'm you know, comfortable with the speed of the game. So it is, I think you bring up a very good point there. The speed of the game, the more reps you get, the more comfortable you are, because you're now getting accustomed to that. Because we all know everything in the NFL happens in a split second, and it's so much even faster than college football.
Yeah, well, for you and for anybody and everybody listening or watching, what Dustin just said, keep that in mind in October when you see Nick Chubb back on the field.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. Because like we talked about, he will be on a rep count. He is not going to be the player we saw before the injury last season right away. Now, he may get back there ultimately, but those first two, three games, again, he has had no live game reps. And so he is not going to be up to speed like we want him to be. And it's going to take time. So just be patient with him.
Yeah.
Real quick on that, George says, do you think the Burrow wrist situation could lead to him fumbling the ball more too?
Potentially, especially, you know, if you're in the pocket or if you're not tucking the ball when you're running, it definitely decreases grip strength. That sort of injury, along with surgery, will decrease your grip strength for a certain amount of time. You can usually get most of that back, but it's going to be diminished. And so, if you got the ball out away from you, if you're kind of cocked back to throw it, or if you're scrambling and it's not tucked away, 5 points of contact. Yeah, absolutely. I think that could lead a little bit of weakness is going to result in potentially more fumbles for sure. But it's just about protecting the ball the right way. And we know that not all players do that every time.
Yeah. Well, there you go. All right, cool. Well, David, thank you for joining us as always. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
Go Browns.
All right, that is Dr. David Ullery. Also want to give a shout out to our friends over at City Barbecue. Guys, just hear me out. City Barbecue, home is where the smoke is. You need to go get your barbecue. They've got brisket. They've got pulled pork, bone-in chicken, smoked sausage, turkey breast. They've got ribs. They've got all the sides that you possibly need. They can cater your events, or you can just pop in there for a quick and easy lunch. They are ready to rock and roll and just knock your socks off. Head on over to City Barbecue right away. Yeah, go ahead, Dustin.
I was just going to say 25th anniversary next week for City Barbecue with their 6 Northeast Ohio locations. So go in. I'll post some stuff out. They're going to have a lot of great specials for their anniversary pricing. But 6 Northeast Ohio locations, get in, check it out. And, of course, we'll be doing some giveaways. Not only are we going to be giving away some gift cards, we're going to be giving away some of that sauce as well that we'll have for some people to enjoy. So.
And Justin, while we're at it, if you don't mind, tell our listeners about Believeland Power Washing and Landscaping.
Guys, Believeland Power Washing. Yes, we put it out there. I'll put it out there again. You can win a free power washing of your home up to 3,000 square feet. That's over a $500 value, by the way. Give them a call, Believeland Power Washing. And by the way, Believeland Landscaping as well. By the way, it's not too early if you got those projects in your yard for next year, or get those things you want to get done before the winter and the snow flies in Cleveland, because it does. But go get your power washing done for your driveway, your house, your windows, or any of that. Or if you need that landscaping project that your wife has told you about, or the wife is tired of it, she's just going to go make the appointment, go do it. They're great folks. Matt and his guys over there are amazing job they do.
Yeah, most definitely. And you know what else I like? I like whiskey. I like wine. And I like wings. You can get that every Wednesday over at our friends over at Western Reserve Distillers. You can also get your official Here We Go Brownies whiskey. They've got bourbon. They've got rye. They have everything you possibly need. Also, really cool space. You can host your events there. You can host your parties, corporate events, or just pop in for a drink and some appetizers. However you want to do it. Go watch a game there. Head on over to Western Reserve Distillers right away.
And we will be there live next Wednesday, Allie. And of course, we will be dropping this. But guys, we made a decision a couple days ago.
Yes, let's do that.
So anybody obviously watching the show tonight, we are moving our viewing time. Same date, but we are moving it up to 7 p.m. Eastern, just because we wanted to be in sync with the Stump Talk podcast. It's on Tuesdays at 7. So anybody watching the show tonight, we will also post it multiple times. So all of our viewers that are used to watching us at 8 o'clock Eastern will now come on 1 hour earlier. So you can get done watching us and get all the everything else you need to get done in your house before you call it a night. So 7 to 8, guys, we'll be announcing that. So we'll be out 7 o'clock next Wednesday, out at that wonderful place, Western Reserve Distillers in Lakewood, Ohio.
There you go. There you have it. We're excited. I'm excited to get an extra hour back in the evenings. I will say, doing an 8 o'clock shows, it's been difficult. So we're excited to bump it back a little bit.
And full disclosure, guys, as you know, I used to live in Boise, Idaho. And a lot of that was when you get off of work at 5, you need an hour to get home, prepared, and do a show. But now that I live in the Eastern time zone and Allie's in the Central time zone, it works out pretty well for both of us to do that at 7 o'clock Eastern. So sorry, Jason, I know you're doing a big no there, but you're just going to have to put up with 7 o'clock, Jason. Or Jason, you've been invited to a lot of in-person shows. You could actually show up for one of those. So not calling you out, Jason, but you can show up for one of the events.
Come on, here. Come on, Jason. All right, let's turn it over to this upcoming game against the New York Football Giants. Look, you're going up against a team that is 0-2, and they have not looked good. This is not a New York Giants team of the past. Danny Dimes, it's been tough. It's been a tough start for this Giants team. Now, last week, he looked better, 11 of 18 for 138 and two interceptions. but, you know, they just don't have a lot. I mean, Devin Singletary, he's their main back. 10 carries for 20 yards, one touchdown. Darius Slayton, they do have Malik Nabers. I'm anticipating his rookie breakout. But, I mean, look. This isn't a very good Giants football team. The Browns should win this game comfortably at home. But we don't have enough faith in this Browns team yet to say that this is an absolute win. This is the National Football League. Anything can happen. And these are all professionals that are ready to get their first win and looking to, you know, set the Browns off course. Now, this is an NFC matchup, not the end of the world. But after that first week one at home performance by the Cleveland Browns and getting all those boos, the Browns are going to want to come back, put on a good performance, and come away with what should be an easy win over the New York Giants.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Stefanski preaches this every week, and it's the truth, and we just take it for granted. No matter who your opponent is, wins come hard in the National Football League. The Ravens probably wanted to win last Sunday against the Raiders. They didn't. Who was the better team probably overall, position-wise, everything? Probably the Ravens. Yeah, but guess what? They didn't win, and the Raiders brought their A game and beat the Ravens. So, again, I'm not taking anything away from this Browns team, but if the Giants come to play, the Browns are going to be in a dogfight, right? And so we always know these are all professional football players, so you don't take any of your opponents lightly, and you never should. And so, like, you're right, Allie, they need to come out. The Browns defense needs to play, like, lights out. Make them uncomfortable all afternoon, get to 2-1, then, you know, have that confidence to go out to Las Vegas and then on to Washington and stack up some wins, because it gets a little tough after this, right? So you want to maybe, if you can be 4-1 as you go into that tough, you know, stretch of the season, you want to have some wins. And when you're getting some healthy guys back, like David Njoku and maybe a Nick Chubb in week 5 or 6, that's when you want to have a good record and your guys are getting healthy, because that's how you make a playoffs. But you got to stack wins. And we talk about this all the time, Allie. Stack wins in this league, because you can't buy back wins late in the season when you need them and you don't have them. So that's going to be very important for this team to stack wins up early in this season.
Yeah, and I do apologize. I read the incorrect stat line. Daniel Jones did look better last week, 16 of 28 for 178 and 2 touchdowns. Devin Singletary, 16 carries for 95 yards and 1 touchdown. So my apologies there. But yeah, you're right. You've got to be able to put wins together. That's a problem that this Browns team has had over the years in being able to build off of wins. They don't come easy in the National Football League, and this is something that the Browns have to have, especially at home when you're trying to figure out your identity. This is the type of team where you should look ahead to them and say, you know, okay, we can get some things figured out and things ironed out in this matchup. That's really what I'm looking forward to seeing. Obviously, I'm looking forward to seeing a win. That is what I want to see most importantly. Of course, our guys being healthy. However, I want to see things cleaned up. I want to see Cedric Tillman having a better game. I want to see this offensive line with much, much fewer pre-snap penalties, less holding. I mean, there's three consecutive holding calls in the game against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
That was, I mean,
that was it. So it's,
I was in a bar with all Browns fans. They lost their mind because it was third and what was it, 36 or whatever the hell it was. Like you're done at that point, right? And I will tell you, that gave me a glimpse of the Browns of old that had terrible players on them and no good players. That looked like the team that does those kind of things, not this kind of team.
Yeah. And I want to mention this. David says these are the teams that we kind of laid down on. You know, back, I mean, in recent history, the Browns kind of play to the level of their opponent. You know, they play up and they also play down. And that's another thing that I want to see this Browns team get away from. I want, well, obviously we want to play up to your opponent, but when you have Super Bowl aspirations, you need to be consistent. And it should be pedal to the metal every quarter of every game because, you know, that's important. That matters. Rather than, you know, looking at this Giants team and them saying, oh, yeah, this is a pretty bad team. We can go in and easily get a win. It's not the case. These are all professionals. So I hope to see that this Browns team comes out aggressive, just like they're competing against maybe an AFC North opponent. That's really important. So that's what I'm looking forward to. I hope this is a get right game and get back on track game and just get some things cleaned up and ironed out. That is what I am dying to see. Also, if you're in Cleveland, I would be dying to see Lady Caroline cruise ship. You can plan an event, head out on a cruise for maybe some brunch, lunch, dinner. They've got voyages for everybody. I mean, take a look at this view. Take a look at this view. Go around Cleveland. You get to see the stadium. I mean, it's pretty cool. Dustin, I know you did this. What'd you think of it?
It was great. The dinner cruise was really cool. They put you at a table just like if you were out on the like on the seas on a major cruise ship. Yeah. You get to make friends. They have a DJ. You get to go up and have food and cocktails. But you get to go not only the stadium, but they take you to the east side of Cleveland, the west side. It's about a 2.5 hour. It's over 2.5, maybe closer to 3 for the dinner cruise. But it's a lot of fun. It goes into the Cuyahoga. You get to go down through the flats. So it's a great thing. If you have friends or family in town, it's a great thing to go out there and take them to and just kind of check out Cleveland and take in all of Cleveland because you really get it's kind of a different perspective of looking at Cleveland from the lake, like, you know, because everybody always looks out at the lake. It's kind of cool to look at the other way around what people see coming in from the city. So,
and also if you're out there with your family and friends, head on over to the Greater Cleveland Aquarium. They've got it all, fresh and salt water habitats that allows you to journey to nearby lakes or faraway oceans. They have daily interactive experiences that put you directly in touch with the living world and your natural curiosity. So that's really cool. It is family friendly. You can take the kids. Go by yourself. I'm a big fan of an aquarium. Go check them out at Greater Cleveland Aquarium.
And some of our friends that came in tonight got some free tickets to take their family down. So we got free tickets, by the way, guys. If you want to take your friends or family to go down there and check it out, like I said, Allie, you're right. It is really cool to see all the different habitats and stuff. You know what they have, Allie? They have frogs there. They have frogs.
Got to keep dirty away from them. Got to keep dirty away from the aquarium. Okay, let's go around the league. Before we make our picks, I have a question for you.
Oh, boy.
Are the Saints for real? Are they legit?
Well, I will tell you this. We talked about this, Allie. You and I have never been down on David Carr, right? We've always said David Carr is...
Well, I don't know about David Carr. Derek Carr, yes.
I mean, Derek Carr. But Derek, we've always said, well, they're brothers. Yeah,
and I've always liked Derek Carr.
And they both played at Fresno State, so that's why I always get them confused. But he's always been... I've never had a problem with him. And I know the Raiders gave up on him, but... I don't know, I guess is my question, because that game you had, you know, I don't know. I'm going to pump the brakes because that's a small sample size. So I'm going to say, are they 2-0, by the way? Are they 2-0? Okay.
I mean, they absolutely demolished the Cowboys. 44-19. Demolished.
And they had, what, 4 rushing touchdowns in that game? Is that correct?
Yeah. Alvin Kamara had, like, 44 fantasy points. It was insane.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's where I don't know.
Yeah.
Was the run defense just that bad for the Cowboys that day? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Give I know it's hard.
Give me 2 more games.
Yeah.
Give me 2 more games.
I mean, they're tough. I think that they're they're up there right now in terms of talent. That's a good team. They've got a good test coming ahead this weekend against the Eagles. But with that, let's go around the league. Last week we tied, Dustin. So we split down the middle. But
so
let's
are we 0-2 and 1?
I am 1-0-1. So you are.
Oh, 1-0, because yeah, okay. So
yeah,
so
yeah,
you're 1-0 and 1-5.
I've tied with you, so
that is better than last year. And by the way, we have to come up with a really good wager.
Do
we keep hunting the ball on this? So
how
do we have David come up with it? Let's have David
like
be
that.
The let's have David be the neutral part. What the winner has to do.
So. All right, deal. All right, let's kick it off with Thursday night football. Patriots at Jets.
Patriots at Jets. I like Aaron Rodgers in this. I'm going to go Jets.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Jets here. Giants at Browns.
Browns.
Yeah, give me the Browns. Eagles at Saints.
Oh, wow. Well, this is the test, right?
Yeah, this is the test.
I think this is where the Saints come back down. Sirianni knows he kind of blew that game. I think the Eagles won a squeaker on the road. I'm going to go Eagles here.
I'm going to go with the Eagles here also. They bounce back. Saints come back down to earth. I think this is a great matchup. Give me the Eagles here. Texans at Vikings.
Texans are good. Give me the Vikings actually in this one. Give me the Vikings actually because they're at home. Give me the Vikings.
All right, I'm gonna take the Texans here. I think that the Vikings need to be brought back down to earth a little bit with Sam Darnold, who's played very well.
We need to talk about him. Sam Darnold looks like with good coaching, he could be all right this year. So I
yeah, 17-26 for 256, two touchdowns. I mean, not bad. But I am gonna take the Texans in this matchup. Broncos at Buccaneers.
I'm going to go Bucks. Broncos are – I don't know what Bo Nix is. I don't like it.
Yikes. Packers at Titans.
Packers. I think the Packers are for real.
Yikes. This is a hard one. I think that they are too, but, man, still some question marks there at quarterback Malik Willis. I don't know. I'm gonna go with the Packers also. I think they win this one. Bears at Colts.
Colts.
Yeah. At home, give me the Colts. Chargers at Steelers. That's going to be a fun game.
Okay, I think this is where the Steelers get a reality check. I think the Chargers win this on the road. They just is this the Brothers match? No, this isn't the Steelers. No, I think the Chargers come in and win this game. I just think they're the more talented offensive team, and they're just going to show it on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm taking the Chargers here also. Dolphins at Seahawks.
Seahawks.
Yep. I'm going to take the Seahawks here also. Panthers and Raiders.
We have picked different games, right? We have picked
Yeah.
Okay.
Panthers at Raiders.
Panthers at Raiders. Raiders.
Yeah, Panthers are trash. Although I could see a world where Andy Dalton a little bounce back. They get a win.
Tell me how you really feel. They're trash.
Like, this is going to be a good one. The 49ers at the Rams.
Is McCaffrey back? We don't know. Or is he going to be out for a while?
No, he's going
to
be out.
That's right. He's on the. He went to the IR, didn't he?
He's out. This is really tough. Rams need a win.
Thing. Rams need a win. Are they 0-2 or are they 1-2?
They're 0-2.
God. You know what? Give me the Niners because I think they got embarrassed, and I do think the Niners are the better football team, actually. Even with McCaffrey out, I think their defense shows up in this game.
Yeah.
Give me the Niners.
I think I agree with you. I agree with you. Rams need to win, though. They're going to start 0-3 if they go down to the Niners. But I agree that the Niners are just a better overall football team. They just have a better recipe. But, that's a tough one. But I'm going to stick with the Niners. Lions at Cardinals.
Man, the Cardinals last week. I mean, crazy, right?
Crappy team.
So here's the thing. I think the Lions need to bounce back. Mm-hmm. And I think the Lions could get an ugly win on the road. So I'm actually going to take the Lions in this. And Dan Campbell lights them up and gets them playing with, And I think Kyle Murray comes down to earth. I'm going to go with the Lions with this one, but it's going to be a really, really close game.
I think this is going to be a close game. I really do, but I am going to go with the Lions. They are probably also embarrassed. They need to win here also. Fun game, Ravens at Cowboys.
As crazy as this is, I think the Cowboys are going to win, and I think the Ravens are going to be 0-3, and I mean that wholeheartedly because you have two teams that got embarrassed.
Yeah.
But I do think the Cowboys with that defense are going to feel kind of like our own Browns, kind of mad, pissed off, and they're going to come out and play. And I think they're going to kind of neutralize Lamar Jackson. And I think the Cowboys, I'm not saying they're going to blow out the Ravens, but I think they're going to win this one. I really do.
I hope you're right. But I am going to go with the Ravens in this. I think they get their first win. Chiefs at Falcons.
Chiefs. I don't think there's not much firepower coming out of the Falcons offense. I'm going Chiefs on the road.
They'll figure it out eventually, but I think the Chiefs win this one. But I could also see like a sneaky game where the Falcons come away with a win over an unsuspecting Chiefs team where they think they're just going to be able to walk in and get this win in Atlanta. I could see that, but I am going to go with the Chiefs here. Monday night, Jacksonville at Buffalo.
Okay. I think Jacksonville is not a good football team after watching that game on Sunday. And Buffalo, as much as this, I think they are the team that could beat the Chiefs this year. Buffalo looks good. I like Buffalo. Buffalo's playing with some confidence and some swagger, and they have a good reason to. I'm going with the Buffalo Bills.
Give me the Buffalo Bills here also. And last but not least, on Monday Night Football, the Commanders at the Bengals. Hey, another scrappy team, this Commanders team.
Yeah, Jacoby Brissett's the starter, right?
Nope. Nope. He plays for New England, Jaden Daniels.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Yeah. He used to play for the man. I do think the Bengals kind of get a bounce back. So I'm going to go with I think the Bengals win this one. Not that I want them to win, but I think they get a win.
Yeah, I think they do too. As much as I would love for them to also start 0-3 on the season, don't think they do. I'm going to take the Bengals here also. But we'll see. I wouldn't want to be in a position where the Browns were down 0-2 and going in and having a tough matchup in week three. That'd be a tough place to be. I'm glad that the Browns are 1-1 and have hopefully a decent game ahead of them against the New York Football Giants. Dustin, any closing thoughts as we wrap up on a beautiful Wednesday evening?
Yeah, I unfortunately just watched the Minnesota Twins go up 2 runs on the Cleveland Guardians here in the top of the 10th, unfortunately. So it is 4-2 Twins. As we all know, the Guardians are fighting for not only the American League Central, but a playoff position with that magic number. Do I think they're still going to get there? Yes. But of course, you know, division teams play tight down the stretch, right? That's what you do in a pennant race. So other than that, Allie, just wish everybody a great rest of the week. If you're in Cleveland, come down, enjoy all the festivities of everything there is tailgate-wise. But more importantly, remember, starting next week, the show will come to you 7 p.m. Eastern, not 8 p.m., but we'll make sure we make plenty of announcements so everybody can join 1 hour earlier starting next Wednesday.
Yeah, there you go. There you have it. We're excited about it. Hopefully we will be talking to you on Sunday after a victory. With that,
everybody, there we go.
Stay safe, stay healthy. And as always, Browns fans, go Browns.
Go Browns.